Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Mick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th day of December, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
I was waiting for Dave.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're eventually going to be bringing you news, views, things that you use, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news, as you can hear, Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. And Michael Oden has heroically, and I might say courageously, stepped in to take his place today. So we'll be so he'll be answering the phones for us.
And I want to apologize to the people on YouTube. My car's in the garage, and got my wife's car, so I forgot to bring my accessory bag, and so I'm missing some cables. So I'm trying to jury rig something.
Yeah, we'll see. In the meantime, of course, you can always listen to us either live over the air or via the web stream at jazz901.org. And in the meantime, I will read some news. Neverware lets you turn old PCs and Macs into Chromebook-like devices through its cloud-ready OS. While primarily aimed at schools and enterprises, a free home edition for everyone is available. Google has now acquired NetWare and CloudReady with plans to integrate it with Chrome OS. The news was quietly announced by Neverware on Monday afternoon. It comes after Google invested a Series B funding round 3 years ago. NetWare's CloudReady OS is based on Chromium, which is the open source version of the Chrome OS. It's more than a forked browser. Rather, it's a full operating system designed to replace Mac or Windows on older hardware that might not be getting official updates anymore. It's an ideal solution for schools with aging computers and something Google wants to make an official offering. NetWare tells existing customers there will be no changes to the free home edition or other support policies at this time. Meanwhile, CloudReady will continue to be available as is, and we're committed to supporting and maintaining existing customers. This is very exciting. It means that over time, Chrome OS will be available to run on any hardware you like. Right now, some things like the Android apps and Netflix don't work on CloudReady well, if at all. Neither does the Play Store, and there's no PowerWash. That all will change as CloudReady becomes fully integrated into the Chrome OS because, as the Neverware FAQ says, over the long term, CloudReady will become an official Chrome OS offering. That means the very definition of what a Chromebook is could expand exponentially. Instead of a Chromebook being a computer created and sold explicitly to run the Chrome OS, a Chromebook could essentially become any computer on which Chrome OS is installed. Converting an old Windows or Mac system into a Chromebook via CloudReady, or whatever it's called down the road, maybe just Chrome OS, should be almost the same as buying a new computer with Chrome OS, practically speaking. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google acquires CloudReady OS, and your choices are, wow, can't wait, new life for old hardware, that's nice, meh, cloud what now, and of course, other. So far we have 20 votes total, and cloud what now is of course in the lead. And if you said other, we would love it if you would then put something in the poll discussion. You can find that at our website, soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 19 December 20. Google acquires CloudReady OS. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at our brand new, not that new anymore really, text line 585-205-8887. I think this is an interesting little thing because there are a lot of old machines out there that people don't really know what to do with. A lot of people are unwilling to try Linux. And if a machine is old enough, Linux is going to be a fairly slow experience, as is everything else. Chromebooks are designed, the Chrome OS is designed to run on fairly slow hardware. So that'll be, I think, an interesting way to keep old machines continuing to run. And particularly, I think, in schools, because they love the idea of keeping old hardware. Rather than having to buy new machines every couple of years.
Yeah, one time, speaking of old hardware, when I was in elementary school, and this would have been in 1997, 1998.
Yeah, you're a puppy.
We had Apple II computers in the room.
Yeah.
That's old.
Yeah, that's old.
And that's what I started on.
Right. Look, schools are already embracing the Chrome OS, Chromebooks in general. But if they can take those old Apple Mac books and old Dell laptops and et cetera, and turn them into Chromebooks that are not only running the full real Chrome experience, but also integrate into their management system, because one of the nice things about Chromebooks is that when you have a slew of them, you can manage them with the Chrome management system that lets you do all kinds of great stuff with it. And it would seem to me that's the kind of thing that almost any organization would be glad to jump on, to take that old hardware and keep it running that way. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up? Carl, you there? Carl? We don't have Carl. I'm sorry, Carl. I don't know what happened. Give us a call back at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at 585-205-8887.
Speaking of text, I have a text right here.
Excellent.
From Bob C. from Rush. He says, quote, "I can't log into my Netgear router using routerlogin.net. It used to work. What has changed?"
I don't know routerlogin.net. Hold on a second.
It's some routers use that as a DNS table, manual DNS. What's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, host file to point to itself. And it was always sort of a trick, because who knows what the address of itself is. So that the thing you need to do is look at what your computer's address is in your TCP settings. Look at what the gateway says. 192.168.1.1 is the gateway, and use that as the address to log into the router.
Right, and then you just put that in your browser, you know, where you would normally type google.com or whatever.
Or this routerlogin.net, which is no longer working, so something changed in the internal host table, probably, the router.
No, what probably changed was the address of the external router, cable router or the fiber router or whatever they're using. And when that changes, the router login will not work for externally. But you can always log in internally, as Steve said, by using the address of your network. And depending on what operating system you're using, you can easily find
address.
IP address by typing in, let's say you're using Windows, you would type in, from a command line, you would type in ipconfig. It will show you yours, and usually, let's say it's 192.168.1.15, say. Generally speaking, your router would be those first three numbers .1. So you, in this case, would be 192.168.1.1. So you could just type that, 192.168.1.1, into your browser. And that would give you access to your router, because every router has a small web server built into it, and you can just access it directly by using the IP addresses, as I just said. So that should do it for you. You should be able to do that without a problem. Do we have Carl back? Nope, no Carl. Okay. Sorry, Carl. Honestly, call back. We don't know what happened to you. We'll figure it out. But yeah, so
I have another text asking to please talk about the Russian hack of government computers.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to talk about. I made the first story the Google thing because it just excited me, but then the Russian hack thing came up. Here's the deal with the Russian hack. There's a company called SolarWinds, and they do an RMM, remote management, and I forget what the other M stands for. Do you remember?
Module?
No. Remote management and something. Maintenance. Yes, thank you. Remote management and maintenance. Basically, it's one of those dashboard things you see with all the pretty pictures and, you know, all the stuff that soothes the fevered brains of executives. They get to look at those and think they're in control. At any rate, they make that product available through a company called SolarWinds to many, many government agencies, including the NSA and Homeland Security and the Defense Department and a whole bunch of other places. Well, as it turns out, there was a hack. The Russians, and we know this is not speculation. We know the Russians hacked into the system itself and therefore compromised many, many, many systems. Now, that's bad enough. The problem has been that there has been, up until yesterday at least, little or no response from the federal government about it, even talking about it. And we all know about it. So we should be hearing something that at least says we're on it, we're not on it, something. But the fact is that this hack, and look, I spent most of my career as a systems administrator. And so I know that no system is perfect. Any system can be hacked. But for a hack to have occurred months and months ago, and for nobody to have noticed it or cared about it or done anything about it, quite honestly, that's just reprehensible. I don't think whoever is running those systems, and I'm assuming it's multiple people because it's multiple systems across the board, whoever's running those should be in touch with all the other people, all the other system administrations of all the other administrations, and they should all be talking to each other, and somebody should have noticed it sometime before 4 months went by. That's just lousy systems administration, quite honestly. I don't get it. I truly don't get it. How something like that can go on for so long and nobody notices anything.
But hearing about hacks and break-ins at other companies, that's very, very common. The Marriott Starwood break-in was 4 years before anybody noticed.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a system broken into back when I first started putting systems on the internet. I had one broken into. I noticed it within a day. You know, so I don't get it. But okay, it is what it is, and I guess we'll see if anything changes with the next administration. Who knows? At any rate, it's pretty serious. Nobody knows at this point what got hacked. I mean, we know what systems got hacked, but we don't know what was taken. We have to assume everything was taken, but there doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency from the current administration, and certainly the next administration has nothing to do with it yet. They can't fix it obviously till they're there. So I don't know what's going to happen, but right now I don't feel very secure as a nation. I think we're it's a real problem, and I don't know what to say, except that it's reprehensible and it should not have happened. And frankly, head should roll. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerald from Webster, New York. Hi, Gerald. What's up?
Hi, sorry to get you off the discussion of the hack.
No, it's fine.
I'm driving, and I heard something just about Cloud Ready.
Yeah.
And I have a Lenovo desktop. I use Google Chrome. It's Windows 10. I've got a terabyte of hard drive, 8 gig of RAM. I do a lot of photography, so got a large screen and so on. What is Cloud Ready going to do for my computer? You said it would update old equipment.
Well, yeah, basically the idea is Cloud Ready, once it's fully integrated into the Chrome ecosystem, I guess, it will essentially turn your Chromebook in, excuse me, it will turn your old hardware into a Chromebook. So everything you can do on a Chromebook, you can do on this.
Can you give me some examples? I know what a Chromebook is, but I really don't know what they do.
Well, all right. So now, again, this is once it's fully integrated, because right now most versions of Cloud Ready can't do Android apps and a couple of other things. But
it does most of what the average person needs.
Right, right. But a Chromebook in general can do the following things. It can do all the stuff you would normally do in your browser, right? Plus, you can run Android apps. Plus, you can run Linux apps. And shortly, you'll be able to run Windows apps.
And for most people, their interaction with the computer is websites and email and photos, and the Chromebooks do all that perfectly fine.
Right. Now, if you are a photographer and you do a lot of
Lightroom and Photoshop.
Lightroom and Photoshop and stuff
Photoshop,
like that.
Yeah.
You probably don't want a Chromebook, because those are, at least right now, because, you know, those are Windows or Mac specific programs, and currently they don't run in a Chromebook. Like I said, Chromebooks will be able to run Windows programs, but they don't at this moment.
But there are similar programs, GIMP, for example, for editing pictures, and there's movie editing programs also that work just fine. That would be great for casual users, maybe not somebody who is, you know, working on the billable hours.
Right.
But for the average home user, they would be fine.
Right. If you're somebody who needs to get rid of red eye or, you know, that sort of thing. But if you're really a professional photographer and you're manipulating photos to make them look perfect, a Chromebook may not be the product for you at this point.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm an enthusiastic amateur.
There you go.
I use Adobe Photoshop, the Windows Photos program, and then Canon's DPP4, which comes with DSLRs for Canon cameras.
Right, right, right.
So I think I'm good to go for the time being anyway.
Yeah, I think you are. This is mostly for people who have old equipment lying around or are not happy with Windows or whatever, but are general users rather than higher end or special need users.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. That said, I use a Chromebook constantly, but I don't edit photos beyond the most minimal things. And I can edit audio, I can edit video, although I don't. I can clean up pictures. I can't really, you know, manipulate them to the extent of someone like Gerald, but I can do all of that fairly easily without any problem at all on a decent Chromebook. And so for those, you know, and particularly for, as Steve said, people who are general users, they do email, they do web browsing, they do a little bit of this and that, but nothing major, not high-end games, not high-end programs. The ability to pull that old laptop out of storage, not too old, I'm not talking 20 years old, but, you know, a laptop that you just had to put away because it didn't do enough for you, and to be able to put Cloud Ready on it and continue to use it as a second machine or whatever, is great. I know a number of people who have them and set them on in the parlor, so when they're watching television, they can look people up on IMDb and, you know, that sort of stuff. And they do video chat meetings and all that stuff through them. So they're very useful for those things. Okay, our next caller is Joe from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hi. I'm wondering if you guys know about Quora, Q-U-O-R-A. It's some kind of an information thing from that was through Google that I would rather not receive, and it's inundated all of my devices. Now, about a year ago, there was a message from them, and when I opened it up, it said, "If you open this, that means that you have agreed to receive our messages." Do you know any way I can get rid of this thing?
Well, it depends on what happened. Okay, so when you opened that thing, which you probably shouldn't have done, one of two things happened. Either you got a small program installed on your computer, or it installed something in your browser. Now, does this happen in just the browser or everywhere?
It happened everywhere on my in my Google email.
It hasn't. So this is not the real Quora, then. The real Quora is a website that has nothing to do with Google for people asking and answering questions. So it sounds like you have a fake malicious program installed and need to dance the tango to clean everything out.
Yep. Your best bet your best bet is to go to Security Tango at securitytango.com and dance the tango. You can easily look up your particular operating system.
Yeah.
I suppose it may be possible that when you signed up for Quora, you told them to email you any question you subscribe to.
Well, apparently about 10 or 12 years ago, my daughter set up Google and a Google account, and apparently this was included in it unbeknownst to either of us then.
Well, no, you would have to manually sign up for Quora, and you would have to manually tell it to send messages to you that you subscribe to.
Right, but what you might want to do is take a look at the bottom of one of the Quora emails and see if there's a link to unsubscribe.
Right. Yeah, I think I've tried that in a couple of years past, and it said you have to notify us with some reason you want to unsubscribe, which I did, and of course it didn't do anything.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like real Quora to me.
Yeah.
Ah.
I think it's a fake thing. So your best bet, I think, at this point is to dance the security tango, clean up your machine, and hopefully get rid of this whatever is causing this to happen. Now, it may just be that they've got your number, as it were. And one other thing that you can do is if you take a look at the emails, you can see where they're coming from, whether it ends up being Quora.com or somewhere else.
I see.
And you can then create a filter in Gmail that dumps all those emails before you ever see them.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because it's showing up in all of my devices.
But it's showing up through your Gmail, right?
Through my, yes.
Right. So in Gmail itself, if you log on via the web, you can, please go away at the moment. Thank you. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a little gear. That's your settings, right?
Yeah.
And under settings, you want to click on see all settings.
Okay.
Because they make everything harder now. And then one of the choices under settings is filters and blocked addresses. So you can create a filter. In fact, you can just, I believe you can do it right from an email.
I see.
Yes, filter messages like these. So open one of the emails that you don't want.
Yeah.
Select filter messages like these.
Yeah.
And you can decide whether it's the from line, which is probably the thing you want at this point, or you could, it could be something in the to line or the subject or, you know, has the words, some certain words in it or whatever. And then once you do that, you can create a filter. And one of the choices under filter is put it in the trash.
What's that again?
One of the choices in the filter is you can put it in the trash.
Oh, in the trash. I see.
Right. So yeah. You'll never see it. It comes in, it goes to the trash. You're done.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Absolutely. Good luck.
Good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah. There's
a lot of bad guys that use names that are so close to good guys, you think it's the good guy.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 32 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Well, that must mean you're listening to Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we go on, let me remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be hosting an online service. We are a service.
You went to theology school, didn't you?
Seminary,
yeah. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. I not only went to the seminary, I got kicked out of the seminary. But we meet every 9 o'clock in the Soundbites Lounge. You can find that at soundbites.org/lounge. There's a link there that is only active between 9 and 10. PM and I have to let you into the lounge. So if you go there at any other time, you're either going to not find anything, or you're, even if you bookmark the URL, you're going to be staring at a blank screen waiting for somebody to let you in who won't be there till Sunday night. But we meet there every Sunday night at 9 PM and we'll answer your computer questions and we'll also chit chat. And for any of you who are Ask Nick members, we do that the same sort of thing on Wednesday nights, in the Ask Nick forum. So, an Ask Nick Lounge, excuse me, on mastermindlounge.com. And so you can join us there. If you're a member of Ask Nick, you can do it Wednesday nights, but anybody can join us on Sunday nights to answer your questions. So it should be and that link is right at the top of our homepage. So that should be fine.
Yeah, I see you changed the URL too to lounge.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I have a text.
A text?
Yes, from Jerry in Rochester. He says, I have a new Dell Inspiron 1545 laptop. Clean the fan and new thermal paste, but it still runs at 90C. I still can't find a program that monitors or boosts fan speed for this box. Can you assist? Thanks.
Which operating system? Is going to be the question.
Right. I'm sure it's Windows. People who have Windows never think to tell you they have Windows.
Yeah.
I don't a program specific to the Dell Inspiron. That's a very good question.
I'm sure there's plenty.
He just texts back that it's a Windows 10 64-bit.
Okay. There is I don't know if it's for every model, but for the Dell, for most Dell computers, you have to look to see first in the BIOS whether or not there is fan speed built in and also activated in the motherboard. And of course, BIOS changes so often. But you get to it generally on a Dell from a cold boot, not best to do it from a cold boot. As it's booting up, keep tapping at the F2 key until you see a screen that says, do you want to go into the BIOS? And then you do that and look through it to see if there's a fan control thing that's available to you.
I just found one online called SpeedFan.
Right.
LifeWire. So LifeWire has some pretty interesting life hacks and how to do things. And their first hack is you put a potentiometer in the fan cable before you plug it into your motherboard, and then you have a little knob you can turn.
That's nice. That's a lovely thing.
Or you can use this software.
Dell Command, or I think it might now be called Power Manager, from Dell has a fan control in it. So if your system will allow you to do fan controlling, that program will do that, and you can get that from their website. On the other hand, it may well be that you have a problem with bad thermal paste.
Although 90 isn't really that bad for a computer these days.
Depends on what you're doing.
Especially if you're pushing it.
Right. The average is about 85 Celsius or centigrade if you're old. So 90 really isn't that bad. You're not going to get it down much below that under most circumstances.
Yeah, mine's running at 150 Fahrenheit, 160 on CPU. There used to be a button to change it to centigrade, and I don't see where that went to. There it is. Oh, I have to uncheck Fahrenheit.
Oh,
then it does centigrade. Yeah, so I'm. Yeah, my highest one is 73 centigrade.
Yeah. I have a system that runs consistently in the high 50s, but it's a giant machine with enormous fans, and it's not really doing much. So 90 is not something I would normally worry about. But again, if Dell's Power Manager what did they used to call it? Dell Command, they used to call it, does allow you to control the fan if your motherboard lets you control the fan. So give that a try. Again, you can get that from their website.
Apparently he's worried because the box. Idles at 90C.
Again, mine idles, one of them. Like I said, the one with giant fans and giant heat sinks, 16-inch laptop, idles at about 55-60C, but most other machines idle in the 80s. So idling in the 90s is not that bad. Huh? Yeah, you're probably 15 degrees off of starting to throttle, getting heat throttling.
You may want to even make sure that your fan blades are cleaned out. Nothing like gunk in the fan or the heat pipe to slow things down and heat things up.
Right. I think he said originally that he had done that, but one of the things to make sure is that the vents are clear and that the fan itself is not gunked up with anything.
Yep.
And the other thing that you can do is what many people do is get something that lifts the laptop up a little bit, and then they can blow a fan under it. You have a thermal pad.
Passive pad that draws the heat away from the computer.
Right, right. You can get passive pads that do that. You can also get active pads that have a fan in them of some sort and are powered right off of the USB. So anytime the computer is running, that fan is running, you can keep it cooled down. So I would, if in fact you cannot change the fan itself, you can try one of those things, see what happens. All right. In the forum, of course, as I mentioned, poll of the week, if you select other or whatever, you could put something in the forums. And we had Annoyed ask me, where's the choice for Google should be broken up by the government? Well, Annoyed, you'll be glad to know that the Federal Trade Commission is stepping up its digital privacy work and has asked just about every major social media platform you can think of to explain what personal data it collects from users and why. The requests for information went out Monday to 9 platforms or their parent companies, including Discord, Facebook, Reddit, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitch, Twitter, WhatsApp, and YouTube, which is, of course, owned by Google. The companies that received the orders have 45 days to explain to the FCC things like how social media and video streaming services collect, use, track, estimate, or derive personal and demographic information, how they determine which ads and other content are shown to consumers, whether they apply algorithms or data analytics to personal information, how they measure, promote, and research user engagement, and how their practices affect children and teens. In other words, among the things the FTC wants to know, do you give advertisers their money back if you don't actually target the groups they're trying to reach? You know, Facebook does that a lot. They say, oh, well, you know, we'll give you 1,500 impressions to, you know, housewives between 30 and 45 on the West Coast. Really? How do you determine that? And what do you do if somebody from some guy from the East Coast sneaks in? Anyway, the investigations are not part of any specific wrongdoing probe, at least not right now. The commission has the authority to conduct certain kinds of wide-ranging studies not tied to a specific law enforcement proceeding or suspicion. Despite their central role in our daily lives, the decisions that prominent online platforms make remain shrouded in secrecy. Critical questions about business models, algorithms, and data collection and use have gone unanswered. Special attention will be paid to what data social media collects from children and how it uses those data. So do you know what social media platforms do with your data? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, or text us at 585-205-8887. Yes.
Of course, the answer to all this is they get everything and anything they can.
That is exactly correct. Mark Zuckerberg, owner of Facebook, has famously said privacy is dead.
Get over it.
Get over it. Exactly right. And he wants everybody's data all the time. I do get that. I understand his need to sell you to his customers, who are his shareholders. But maybe I don't want to be sold by him. It's one of the reasons I don't have Facebook on my phone. And it's one of the reasons I use a completely separate browser to run Facebook on my computer. It limits.
You have a shadow profile.
Right. It limits the amount of information.
Although your wife, I keep getting suggestions. Do you know you have X many mutual friends?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I do see those.
It's hard for you to be anonymous.
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, that's just the other part of it. Everybody you know who knows somebody else. That's why I get these suggested friends. Mm-hmm. I actually know none of them. Absolutely none of them. I used to limit my friends list to my actual friends.
Yeah.
And people would send me very hurt emails. Hey, I listen to you every week. How come you won't friend me on Facebook? Well, okay. So now.
I don't know who you are because I can't tell who's listening because we don't track those things.
We don't track those things. This station does not track you. But
that's only the television that can see what you're watching.
That's exactly right. I wave to people every once in a while. And, hi. Yeah. Oh, you on YouTube? Shame on you. I'm just saying. Of course, in this era of Zoom meetings where people aren't wearing pants, mm-hmm. you can often just say shame on you to somebody and they're like,
ridiculous things some people have done. There have been so many stories about people in like a important Zoom meeting for their company. And in the other window, they're watching porn.
Yes.
And they mix them up and post the wrong thing in the wrong window.
Yep.
Really? You can't wait 5 minutes?
In all of the video meetings I have done across Mastermind Lounge and Zoom and Skype and everything else over the last, 35 years. Is that how long we've been in quarantine?
Yeah.
About that. I actually have a folder full of screen captures that if I were into blackmail, I'd be in good shape right
nice.
Now. But yeah, so there's who knows what they're doing with your data? Well, we all know what they're doing with your data. They're selling your data. You are a commodity. That's all you are to them. And their job is to use that commodity to make money for their shareholders. And they do. Quite diligently. Excuse me. Seem to have the hiccups all of a sudden.
It would be nice if the original intent was that they would give you targeted ads for things that you like.
Right.
So they have to know what you like. And now it's just... There was a story last year about a supermarket knew a girl was pregnant before she did,
yeah,
based on her buying habits, and so sent her coupons for diapers.
Yep. And look, people like me, I search all kinds of stuff while I'm answering people's questions. So I get an enormous number of ads for stuff I could not conceivably care less about. What I would love to see all these companies do is turn off that algorithm for Christmas. Because the stuff I search for my wife and the stuff I search for my daughter for Christmas presents is not anything I'm going to buy any of ever again, ever in my life, ever. So stop sending me ads for those things. You're just wasting your time and mine.
And then the other thing I hate is when you have already bought something, there's no way to say, they should know. Especially Amazon. They should know, I just bought it from you. Stop showing me ads, especially if it was cheaper.
Well, and more importantly, stop showing me ads for the thing I just bought.
Yeah.
The actual exact thing I just bought.
Yeah.
Don't you know?
Yeah. I like the ones every now and then. Why don't you treat yourself? And there was something in my wish list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's, you know, it's all about selling you to the shareholders selling you to other companies. And honestly, if you actually understood what people have, what information companies have on you, you'd go hide in a bunker somewhere in Montana. I have an address, by the way.
Yeah.
Decommissioned
silos are really popular these days.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's an amazing amount of information that they gather on you, and every single page on the planet has a Facebook link in it somewhere, and that means they track you even when they're not tracking you. You can run programs like Facebook Fence, add-ons, extensions like Facebook Fence that block those things, but most people don't. I never see Google YouTube ads anymore on Chrome because I blocked them.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely see ads in Facebook because I blocked them. And that's hypocritical. You know, we make a penny out of ads on our sites and if you don't block them. But I still do it because they annoy the heck out of me. But yeah, you can run programs like Facebook Fence and Social Fixer and things like that, which YouTube has a thing. You know, now they're embedding stuff in your YouTube feeds.
Yep.
And now a word from our sponsor.
There's pre-rolls and now there's interstitials and post-rolls.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a program that will cut out the interstitials. And what it is, it's crowdsourced.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the first one to watch a thing, you'll see it. But you can say, oh, the ad starts here and it ends here. And when enough people do that, then the ad gets blocked.
And the ads don't even wait for, like, a break in the sentence. They'll cut right off in the middle of a word.
Yep, yep. So, yeah, that's a pretty cool program. And that's, I forget what it's called, but I can find it out if you need it. But, yeah, there's just a bunch of those that are out there that to help you maintain a certain amount of sanity.
Mozilla has one themselves called Facebook Container.
Right.
For Firefox.
Right. So there's a bunch of them out there that are available to do that stuff. In fact, the YouTube one, can I find it now? I think I can. Or not. Blah, 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 blah. I have a lot of them, mostly sponsor block. Sponsor block for YouTube, it's called. Skip sponsorship, subscription begging, and more on YouTube videos. Report sponsors in the videos you watch to save others time. So it's a crowdsourced thing, which is pretty cool. I can't tell you how many extensions I'm in Chrome browser. Most of them are turned off now. There's just a few that I actually keep up running all the time now.
Part of the problem is that for most of the YouTube creators, so YouTube was this great idea someone had to let other people give them data that you make money on.
Yes.
So the YouTube creators make their money off these sponsors. So I always feel a little bad about blocking them, but I want them to get paid, not necessarily YouTube to take all the money.
Because that's exactly,
you know, what's
right.
The typical ad break? You know, YouTube gets 90% and they get 10%.
Well, and that's what many of these interstitials are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, we'll talk about what's one of the big ones? The NordVPN sponsors everybody,
yeah.
And so in the middle of a thing, they'll say, while this is going on, let's talk about NordVPN.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the sponsor block will also
yeah.
block. Because again,
so the native ads where they get the host to actually talk about
right,
it. I don't mind that because I know then he's getting the money.
Well, that's exactly
yeah.
right. That's yeah. exactly right. But yeah, that was on television. That was illegal for a while. For probably 40 years, maybe 50. From the mid-50s right up until Reagan, so 90.
Well, that was one of the big things about, you know, Paul Harvey was the joke that we loved listening to Paul Harvey, but you had to be careful, you know, when the news stopped and the ad started, because it was sometimes hard to tell.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's the kind of thing that that we had laws against for a while, and now we do not. But we did, and advertisers loved it when the personality did the ad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you already trust that person. You already invited that person into your home.
And you're going to probably keep listening to them.
Right. So if they tell you to buy Brito soap, that's going to mean
yeah.
more to you.
I'm trying to find the link. Someone had told me that Facebook just felt like an amicus brief yelling at Safari for the ad
yeah.
blocking and ad tracking built in.
Yeah, exactly. All right. That music tells us you wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away. We're going to be back after a slightly longer break with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, more of Steve Ray, not enough of Michael Oden, and way too much of Nick Francesco. So take a slightly longer bio break and come on back for a whole lot more sound bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You as we come down to the end of our year to know that we are still fully and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. And don't forget, you can still donate at jazz901.org. That big blue donate button is right there. Anyway, hang on. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on the other side of these very interesting commercial interruptions.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The last hour of the year.
That is the last hour of the year. We will not be here next week, it being the day after Christmas. We will be here the day after New Year's. We will be here the following Saturday. We will not be here next Saturday, and we will not be in the lounge next Sunday because we're taking the whole week off. So this is your last chance to get on the air this year, just like Carl did from Pottstown, PA. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hey, how's it going today?
Peachy, you?
Oh, pretty good.
How'd you do with the snow?
Well, my car is kind of stuck in the parking space. It's parked on the street just outside of where I live. But there's like a wall of ice next to it. I could go back and forth, but I can't get out onto the street. I have to get like towed over the ice. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. Good luck.
So, thanks. Anyway, my question, Windows 10, which I have on a desktop PC, still running version 1909. It hasn't updated since August of 2019. It's supposed to update automatically. However, I am running a very slow internet connection. I never exceed about 5 or 6 megabits per second download speed, and I'm just wondering if that might have something to do with it, or if it might be some other reason. Do you think?
Yeah, it has pretty much everything to do with it.
There may be a requirement that needs to be installed first before it will load the feature update. If you check the Windows Update settings panel, it may tell you what it's waiting for. But there's a lot of problems with running the feature updates. So
yeah,
you may not want to.
Yeah, I was thinking of manually trying to update it, but I thought that I'd talk to you first before I would take that chance.
Yeah. Okay. So two things. One is, yes, it could be that it's the Windows 10 update is failing because of slow Wi-Fi speeds.
Mm-hmm.
If particularly, you know, I don't know how you generally work, but if you were to leave your computer on all night when no one else is using the system, you might get a clean download.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing I would worry about most, because it is a known thing. If you have a slow internet connection, you may not get an update to install.
Because it's like a, what, 5, 6, 7 gig file?
Yeah.
So it would take quite a long time.
It will take quite a long time. And in addition to that, you have to have that much free space on your hard drive.
Okay.
And then probably twice that much more for the installer to do its work.
Right. So you want at least 15 gig, and 20 would be safer.
Okay, yeah. I have enough space at the hard drive.
Okay.
So that's good.
But leave your machine on overnight, and particularly, you know, during those times when no one is actually using it, right? Because one of the problems you'll have is, particularly these days, everybody's on some sort of video chat. They're watching movies. They're chatting with their friends. They're doing this and that and the other thing. And our connections are stressed in general. So if you do it, you know, after everybody's asleep, manually kick off that update, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give that a try. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, one of the issues that Microsoft has always had is that updates are large. And that's true of every operating system. Mac updates, you know, if you're going to...
The Big Sur upgrade is 12 gigs.
Yeah.
Because it's got Intel code and Apple Silicon code in it.
Right. So if you don't have, say, 50 gig free on your hard drive, you may not be able to do the upgrade.
And we have seen many occasions where you've got almost enough free, but not quite, and so it fails in the middle.
Yep.
And then you have a non-bootable OS because it failed in the middle.
In the middle, right. And in addition, even Linux machines have the same issue. Chromebooks, not so much. They manage their internal storage a little differently, but it could happen. So you want to make sure that, you know, just because you have a terabyte hard drive doesn't mean you should be putting a terabyte worth of stuff on it. You need to leave some space for updates and all kinds of temp files. So be very careful and very aware of what your system is capable of holding and what you're trying to download. So again, rule of thumb is 3 times the size of whatever you download, because you're going to download that thing, and then your operating system is going to want to put a copy of itself out on the hard drive. That's 2 copies. And then it's going to be doing the upgrade and using all kinds of temp files. That's at least a 3rd copy.
And it's probably compressed during the download, so it has to decompress it.
And it has to decompress it. So 3 times is conservative.
Yeah.
So, make sure that you have all that space available to you. All right. So I don't know how many of you noticed this because it happened fairly early in the morning, but most Google services from Gmail to YouTube to Google Drive suffered a mass outage lasting over an hour on Monday. Across the world, users complained they were unable to access emails and were logged out of ongoing Google Meet sessions. While Google restored all services within an hour of the outage, by then the crash had become one of the biggest social media trends and sent panic waves across businesses in many parts of the world. So what actually happened on Monday? Well, a Google spokesrobot attributed the outage of approximately 45 minutes to an internal storage quota issue. The statement said services requiring users to log in experienced high error rates during this period. All services are now restored, it said, apologizing to everyone affected and promising a thorough follow-up review to ensure this problem cannot recur in the future. With a service of the scale and reach of Google, just Gmail and YouTube together have over 3.5 billion with a B global users. It is now increasingly rare to see an outage that affects all services and users. This is because users even from a single geography are hosted over multiple servers across the world. And even on those servers, there are backups that activate quickly if something goes wrong. However, Monday's outage was not really localized and was among the larger ones experienced in recent times. At its peak, downdetector.com recorded over 1.2 million issues on YouTube and almost 40,000 for Gmail from users in different parts of the world. The outage gained importance given that there has been a surge in users across all online services and certainly in those offered by Google. Basically, what happened was they were upgrading in a slow rollout. So you had some new code and some old code.
Which is supposed to make things work a little better so you don't take everything down at once.
That's exactly right. Only in this case, there was a state change that said if this happens, shut down because there's a real serious problem. And then flag somebody so that they can, and we'll switch over to backup, and you flag somebody to fix it. Perfectly legitimate. And again, when that happens with one service, everybody's fine.
Yep.
But this is computers. And it rolled out at computer speed to every one of their services simultaneously on all of their servers. So every one of them said, we're gonna shut this service down, go to backup, and inform somebody. And the backup went, we're going to shut this service down, go to the next backup, and we'll inform somebody. So everything kind of went down. They, like I said, they fixed it well within an hour, about 45 minutes. But it did happen, and that just shows you the unintended consequence. Look, the true fact is that no human mind can actually hold any concept more complex than a lever. So when you're trying to update a product over 60,000 servers with 1,500 possible combinations, something's going to get screwed up somewhere. In this case, it took down a lot. But the good news, the part to focus on, is the fact that although they had a worldwide outage, they fixed it in 45 minutes. The smart people at Google knew exactly what had gone wrong, exactly what to do to fix it, and did it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the impressive part.
Especially when it was on what might be considered an off shift.
Yes. Yeah, because it happened early in the morning on the East Coast.
Yep.
So there were, you know, it was night shift everywhere else.
West Coast is someone was still up.
Well, they manned them 24/7. Let's be honest, yeah. But still.
Well, you've got your, you know, your A team, your B team, and your C team for your 3-shift rotation.
Exactly right. So yeah, so they did that. They did a pretty good job with that. One of the things that Google is pretty good at is keeping track and fixing issues. Unlike the federal government with the SolarWinds thing, which we should probably talk about in a little more detail. Look, I get it. When you've got good people on the other side, and they can then easily sneak into your system. But the theory is we've got really good people on our side, and they just didn't catch it. So I don't know if nobody was paying attention or the people on our side weren't quite as good as they should be, or what the issue is. But really, it's worse than a black eye, because nobody knows what data they stole or how much of it they stole. Worst case, all of it. All of it. And that has national security implications well beyond somebody knows what you bought on Amazon last week. Yeah, there's a lot of issues there that need to be dealt with by the federal government, who so far seems to have had no response, unless they did something this morning, which I didn't read. So I was out of the house a little early this morning.
What's the weekend? Nobody works on the weekend.
Nobody works on the weekend. My suggestion is that the federal government get their little act together. Right now, it's unconscionable that something like that could happen and go undetected for so long. Excuse me. I get it when something like that happens to you or to me or even to some mid-level company. The people they've got running it may not be top-notch in the nation, but theoretically, the people at the NSA and places like that do indeed have. The people who are the top in the industry, and they should have been on top of this, and they should have caught, and they should have had it.
I have a text in from someone that wants to know what you guys think of Microsoft announcing it'll develop its own processors for PCs.
Everybody's
doing it.
Yeah. I mean, Google started doing that like 3 years ago. They haven't announced anything yet, but we know they've been developing their own. Apple announced their own and has it in production. And now Microsoft is doing it. I absolutely get it.
And that's sort of where the ARM conglomerate came from, was we need another chip to fight against Intel's domination.
One of the issues has always been that Intel is a general purpose chip. It has to do everything for everybody. So it's a jack of all trades and master of none. What Apple did and what Google is doing and what Microsoft is going to do is looked at their system and said, what's important to us? Let's make a chip that does those things really, really well.
Yep.
And the things that we do not use, let's just leave out.
We've been setting up some of the new Apple Silicon Macs, and holy cow, were they fast.
Yeah.
Things that we're used to waiting minutes for. They're done already. No, it can't be done already. Yes, it is.
Right. 40 years ago, I used a couple of systems that were designed, the chips were specifically designed to run Forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they ran as their native language. They were blazingly fast. To this day, I've not run anything as fast as those, because they were purpose built to the command set of Forth and did nothing else. And that's what Apple has done with the M1 chip. That's what Google is doing with their Google chip, which will probably be the G1. And that's what Microsoft is doing. They can't use M1, so they're gonna have to call it something else. They'll probably call it chip. Because for all their money, they have nobody who makes up interesting names. What do we call our word processor? I don't know. Processor? No, something catchier. How about Word? Yeah, there you go. Come on. At any rate, the point is...
There was Clippy.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, maybe that's why they stick with things like Word.
Yeah.
At any rate, the idea is that they're all coming up with their own chips. And I think it's a great idea, because it really means that they'll be as fast and as useful as possible. Sorry, go ahead.
Hey, everybody. It's
Chippy the computer chip.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Badgie from Star Trek Lower Decks.
Badgie.
It's an animated badge that wants to kill you.
Oh, nice. Okay, very nice. What that will mean at some point is that companies like the various Linux companies, and now CloudReady, if they want to run on the M1 chip, they have to figure out how to do that. And they may not be as fast as native Mac OS. On the other hand, if your choice is throw away your computer because it won't run Mac OS, the latest Mac OS, or put something that's just slightly slower, it's not much of a choice.
Yeah.
Right. And the same thing with Linux and on Macs and on Windows machines, and the Chrome OS on Windows and Mac machines. So you see a lot of purpose built system. That's the RISC chip, the reduced instruction set computer. That's basically what they're running.
Mm-hmm.
You design a chip that runs only the commands you need, and therefore it wastes zero clock cycles looking to do stuff that isn't being done. And RISC chips traditionally run purpose-built RISC chips. And that's been in an industry standard for 50 years.
Maybe that's why NVIDIA is buying ARM. That's where the money's going to be.
That's exactly where the money's going to be. And being able to create your own set of RISC chips. The Mac chip, when they got rid of the 68000, was a RISC chip. What was that called?
The PowerPC.
PowerPC.
Yeah.
Was a RISC chip.
It was an IBM chip. And that
was an IBM RISC chip. And it was not quite as purpose-built as the M1 will be, because they wanted it around a wide range of systems. But even so, it was much faster than the 68000 chips because it didn't do extraneous things. That's what a RISC chip does. Reduced instruction set computer. The instruction set is reduced to only those commands that are important, that are needed for that thing. So, and Intel still creates general purpose machines. Now, that means that they will run on the widest variety of hardware and the widest variety of operating systems and do the widest variety of things, but that's no longer really where the money is these days. And in fact, when a company like Apple or Google or Microsoft creates a purpose-built chip, a bespoke chip, one of the things they have to do is be aware that if they narrow their focus too much, then they're not going to be able to run certain software. It will run badly because the people who write the software have to do so many workarounds to get anything to actually work with that super reduced instruction set. That was one of the problems with the original PowerPC chips. There were a couple of programs that just did not run well on them. Adobe, whatever it was at the time, didn't run well on them at first. And that all got fixed with updates to the masks and yada, yada, yada. But that went on for a while.
And that's kind of the interesting history of Apple, is that they started with the 6502 and then went to the 68000 and everything had to change. And then went to the PowerPC and everything had to change. And then went to Intel and everything had to change. And now the fifth major chip design on the Apple Silicon, and everything has to change again. And very few companies have survived that many radical fundamental changes to their base stuff.
Right. Apple has never had any hesitation in doing that, and it's worked for them so far. And I suspect it always will. I'm not saying, well, the next time they're going to die, because people have been predicting the death of Apple since about the second day of Apple.
Yep.
And so far, all of them, I'd have to say, without contradiction, I believe all of them were wrong.
Well, I mean, they did almost die for a bit there.
Several times,
In the 1990s, before Steve Jobs came back.
Yeah.
Was it even Ron Wayne?
Microsoft had to bail him out.
Right. John, what was his name?
Ron Wayne, the third founder of Apple that no one knows about. He was the 40-year-old guy that knew a little bit more about business. So the 20-year-old Steve and Steve went to him.
Right.
A few months later, he said, this computer stuff
is pretty risky
to me. Let me buy buy my shares out. And okay, Steve and Steve said, okay.
Right.
So he lost out on billions of dollars.
Billions.
He's been interviewed a few times and said, it happens.
And then there's John, what's his name, the Pepsi guy?
Scully.
Scully, John Scully. But generally speaking, Apple comes back. And now, of course, they have a built-in base. You know, they could put out a laptop that's got a tiny little pin in every key so that you bleed every time you press a key, and people would still buy it. Oh, yeah, it's the new pain-powered Mac. We love that. But yes, that Microsoft is going to announce their own processors, and I think that's in the long run not a bad idea. Certainly, Apple has decided that they can make enough money with their sales base producing their own chips. And Microsoft, as much as Steve will hate to hear this, has an infinitely larger sales base.
Well, and one of the things that made it not as risky for Apple to switch the Macs over is that they've been doing it for 10 years with the iPhone.
Right.
The iPhone used its own chip from the very beginning based on an ARM design. And starting with the A4, it was an Apple design based on the ARM specification. So Apple's been doing this, and they've bought several chip companies over the years, and we've always wondered why. So,
now we know. But yeah, so there's a lot of that's going on in the industry in general. A lot of companies are putting together their own bespoke chips to do instrumentation of various sorts, because again, using a general purpose chip is a great way to develop something. But once you know exactly what processes you're doing and what pieces you need, if you can create a chip inexpensively enough to run only those pieces, your system will run much, much faster.
Yeah. You can optimize it for each specific little thing.
Right. And only those things.
Yep.
So one of the problems with an Intel processor is that it has a list of maybe 1,000 things that it can do. So every cycle, it has to go through that list of 1,000 things and say, are we doing this? Are we doing this? Are we doing this? Whereas the bespoke chips, and even if you don't go through the list one by one, you have to go down that list every time you get a command. And that slows things down. If your list is a tenth that size, you're going to be 10 times faster, sort of. So yeah, that's the kind of thing that we're finding is very advantageous in the industry to have your own bespoke chipset. And like I said, Google's been planning it for years. I don't know where they are in development. They're very hush hush about it. Apple has done it. Now Microsoft is going to do it. So we'll see what.
There's about 1,500 instructions in the x86 chipset.
Right. Right, and if you're
which is interesting, that's all the computer knows, these 1,500 things. So it's a combination of these 1,500 things.
Right, and if you're only really using 800 of them or 900 of them, why not get rid of the ones you don't use?
Yep.
You know, and that's a trivial problem to solve. You know, you take a look at your operating system, and you match it against the codes that are run, and say which ones are not used. Well, we can get rid of those, and we can beef up the ones we do use. You know, we always use X, but on the Intel chipset, X is kind of inefficient. What if we made it more efficient in our chipset? Look, it runs five times faster. You know, that's the kind of stuff that that people are doing with those things, and that's...
What's the date on this? The ARM instruction set has 16 instructions.
Yeah.
What's the date on this? 2005. So 1,500 in an Intel and 16 in an ARM.
Yep.
How about ARM 64? So it's got to be more than 16 instructions, doesn't it?
Does it? All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Tom from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Oh, I heard you guys talking about the Intel processor. Most of the stuff, I didn't understand what you're saying, but I recently switched to Greenlight. Okay, my browser is Firefox. And ever since I've done that, it seems like things are not real fast on my my Windows-based desktop. Okay, no problem with my new iPad. The desktop is about 8 years old, and it has an i3-2120 processor, an Intel processor. It's about 8 years old. Does Greenlight need a faster processor?
No.
Could that be my problem?
No. Greenlight has nothing to do with what's in your computer.
Okay. I didn't know if, when it's going through the browser.
Right. Now, Greenlight only, the only thing that affects Greenlight is that little router box they gave you.
Okay.
And that is, that travels at light speed, quite frankly. So that's not going to be the issue. If your desktop has slowed down, my first suggestion is dance the Security Tango always.
Yes.
Beyond that, check to see if you've added, either on purpose or accidentally, a toolbar to Firefox.
Yeah, too many toolbars can slow down your web browser.
Right. Also, check to see what extensions you've added to Firefox, and make sure that every extension in Firefox is, in fact, one you added.
Okay. I mean, how do I do that? Through the Firefox settings, or?
Right. When you go into Firefox settings, one of the choices you'll see will be they don't call it extensions. What do they call it?
Add-ons.
Add-ons.
Okay.
And you can see which add-ons have been added on.
That should be as low as possible?
Well, just make sure you put them all there.
Okay.
So, for example,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, under
recognize them.
Right.
Okay. Because every now and then I get a pop-up when I'm browsing. It says there's a website that's open that's slowing down the system. And I have an option of either to wait or to stop it. All right? I checked Task Manager. Nothing else is open.
Yeah, because it's something on that website. It's nothing in your computer.
Right.
It's on the website that I'm on.
Yeah.
Okay, so just you try to check the toolbar. And what do you do with the toolbar?
Look to see if there are toolbars that have been added that you did not add.
Yeah, okay.
And usually you'll also see those under extensions. Looks like the current Firefox calls them extensions now, too.
Okay, so you look under add-ons or extensions.
Okay.
And depending on
maybe the processor or not enough RAM. No, that
has nothing to do with Greenlight.
If it was slow before, it will still be slow now.
No, it just seems like it got slower ever since I've been using Greenlight, which has only been like a little over a month.
Yeah, they have nothing to do with each other. That's coincidence, I'm afraid.
How is your computer connected to the internet? Is it Ethernet or Wi-Fi?
You mean Greenlight connected to it? It's hardwired because there's no Wi-Fi capabilities, I guess, to connect the Greenlight to the computer.
Well, you add your own Wi-Fi.
You would add your own Wi-Fi between the computer and the Greenlight box.
That's the only way your iPad could
be on. I have a Netgear router.
That as well to make sure that there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, someone, Janet D., pointed out in the YouTube chat that his PC could have a slow Ethernet card. It may only be 10 meg, not 100 meg.
That's very true. But it still would have been faster than what he was using before.
Yeah.
Right? But, yeah, you're right, Janet. That it could be that. But one of the things that you really want to...
Which card was it you said?
The Ethernet card. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, check the specifications that came with it and check to see if it's only a 10 megabit card. But even so, that should be faster than... Yeah. What he had, because certainly whatever he had before was not 10 megabits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. But it wouldn't have been slower.
Okay. I'm just looking at the invoice. It says it's an integrated 8-in-1 media card reader. Is that what?
No, the Ethernet card or network card. Or it could
Ethernet,
say NIC,
okay.
N-I-C. Yeah, if it's 1, 10, or 1,000. Or 10, 100, 1,000 is typically how they're rated.
Okay, and the minimum it should be what?
Well, you want it as fast as you can get it, but if you only have a 10 megabit card, you won't get faster than 10 megabits connecting into the computer, no matter what Greenlight has.
Okay, all right.
So it's a weakest link kind of thing. Whatever is the slowest component, that's as fast as you can get.
Yeah, because if Greenlight is what, 50 megabits megabits per second?
Greenlight is 500.
For 500.
Yeah, and if your computer is only 10, that's
okay.
That's going to be the slowdown.
And you get a update just the card or what?
If you've got a desktop,
an 8-year-old computer, do you think I should get another one?
An upgrade card is only what, $15 or $20 somewhere
in
that range, maybe
okay.
10. So if you've got a free slot in your computer, you could always plug one in and use it. That is not an issue. And if you replace the thing with another desktop later on, you can always pull that card out and put it in the new machine.
Okay. I just see it right here. Integrated 10/100/1000 Ethernet.
Okay, so that you've got the gigabit Ethernet, so that's not the issue.
That's not the issue.
Right.
Could try a new cable.
Could be the cable. Could just be that it's not the computer. It's not because the connection. Listen,
yeah.
What's slow? Is it slow downloading stuff from the internet, or is it slow like when you're running Word or Excel or something?
No, usually when I'm on the internet, I'm not downloading anything. I'm just reading some of my favorite websites.
So two things. First, let's be honest. The internet's slower these days anyway because so many people are on it all the time.
Even with Greenlight?
It has nothing to do with how fast the computer at the other end is.
Okay.
But in addition to that, I would check, like we said, Dance Security Tango and check your extensions. Also, try a different browser just to see if the problem is in Firefox.
All right.
Right? So download Chrome or whatever and try that and see if it speeds up. And then you know that the problem is in Firefox and it's got to be then an extension.
Okay, or just use the Windows browser that's on my computer?
I hate the Windows browser, but yes, you could use that as well.
Okay.
The new Edge isn't bad because it's really Chromium.
Thank you for your information. Have a Merry Christmas. Thanks. You guys are great.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
So, yeah, that's figuring out where the bottleneck is.
Yeah.
The problem with this stuff is there's always a bottleneck. Always. You can move it around. But some component somewhere will be the slowest component in your system.
It's a crazy-looking bottle.
It is crazy.
It has those necks everywhere.
Necks everywhere in the thing. And they move around.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of which, and this may have something to do with Tom's issue as well. A well-organized threat campaign uses what Microsoft calls massive infrastructure to stealthily distribute malware to web browsers, including Chrome, Edge, and Firefox. Users who find themselves caught up in this attack scenario, which can add malicious extensions, inject malicious ads into search results, and even steal credentials in some cases, should, Microsoft said, reinstall their browsers. In a write-up from the Microsoft 365 Defender research team, the persistent malware campaign named Adrazek, is explained in detail. It doesn't make for easy reading, and that's beyond just the technical level of the report. The researchers discovered that the campaign is both sophisticated and persistent in nature. Within the space of 5 months, the researchers tracked a total of 159 unique domains being used by the threat actors to distribute hundreds of thousands of malware samples. Each sample is unique, courtesy of the polymorphic nature of this beast. One domain was found to host 250,000 unique URLs. Another had 100,000 to give you an idea of the scale of this attack campaign. The distribution infrastructure is not only massive, it's dynamic. While some were alive for 24 hours and then vanished, others stayed active for as long as 4 months. The more persistent domains are distributing legitimate files in an apparent attempt to boost their reputation and evade detection. The malware itself poses as a legitimate Windows service once the infected file has been dropped into the program files directory via the Windows temporary directory. What it does then depends to a degree on what browsers are installed. The primary payload appears to be the addition of browser extensions and modification of dynamic link libraries, or DLLs, that enable the insertion of malicious ads into web pages, including search engine results. AdRezek will drop these ads over the top of legitimate ones, and if clicked, these generate revenue through affiliate programs. However, because the malware maintains persistence and does more than just install malicious ads, it's more serious than most such campaigns. Within the Edge browser, for example, a DLL is modified to prevent security controls from functioning correctly. It also will prevent browsers from being updated to the latest version, and in some cases, can attempt to steal login credentials. Microsoft Defender Antivirus, the built-in endpoint protection solution on Windows 10, uses behavior-based machine learning-powered detection to block AdRezek. Users who find themselves infected by this threat should reinstall their browsers to get rid of it. Of course, prevention is better than cure, and not downloading software from untrusted sources or clicking on links to suspicious websites goes a long way as well. And to be clear, this is strictly Windows malware. Mac, Linux, and Chromebook systems are in the clear. So how clean is your system? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415 or text us at 585-205-8887.
There are so many malware programs running around the internet, and now more and more people are using the internet because we've been home so much. The whole poor internet just overwhelmed.
It is. It's we're seeing more and more issues that people are having. Again, mostly on Windows machines, but on all machines, even on a Chromebook, as we've said before, you can get those pop-up ads that come in from a website, and usually you just laugh and shut down that page or shut down the browser, or you can even just reboot your machine if you really want to. It only takes a few seconds, but you can still get some of those things. You're not infected. You're just caught by a drive-by that pops up an ad.
There are nearly a billion malware programs out. 350,000 new malware created every day. 7 billion attacks.
Wait, say that one again.
350,000 new pieces of malware are detected every day.
Every day.
7 billion attacks have been reported this year.
Wow.
That's not how many have happened. That's how many have been reported. Nearly a billion. Every minute, four companies fall victim to a ransomware attack.
Yep.
A real ransomware. So I get a little kick out of the fake ransomware attacks.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to have a fake ransomware attack and then trick someone into paying money that they don't need to, rather than going to all the effort of writing real ransomware.
Yep.
The new ransomware as a service. There's a company offering ransomware as a service.
Yes.
They will infect someone and just take a small cut and give you the money.
Yep. We talked about that on this show. I got a pop-up on my Chrome box that said, you know, there's a problem with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Call this number.
Yep.
Well, yes, there is a problem with Windows. But no, I'm not going to call the number because it's not Windows on my machine.
Yeah.
I'm on a Chromebook. So you can just ignore those things. But yes, you will find that every operating system has some issue somewhere. Like we said, on Chromebooks, it's just drive-by stuff that doesn't actually affect the system. Although you can install toolbars and extensions that do bad things.
And if you call the phone number and they take your money, that's we almost don't want to call that, you know, being hacked. You weren't hacked or compromised. You fell for a trick.
Right.
Which is almost
social engineering
now, yeah. And we've had some of our customers tell us these horrible stories about tens of thousands of dollars they've lost from stolen credit card numbers, because you give them the, and what they do now, it's so insidious. The fake tech support companies are now selling you a service contract. So $600 and we'll protect your computer for a year. So when you go and try to dispute the charge with your credit card company, what the credit card companies do is they go to the other end and say this charge is being disputed, you know, prove it was a legitimate charge, and they send a copy of the receipt. Here, this customer brought a service contract from us. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And so you don't get your money back. You have to really fight it.
That's right, because a service contract is just a service contract.
Yep.
You may never use it. It's like insurance.
Yeah.
You don't sue the insurance company if you didn't use your insurance last year.
I've heard of people trying to do that, though.
Yes, I understand that. But,
if you buy something that's fraudulent or you know, not fit for in its intended use, you have recourse. But if you buy a service contract and don't use all the service, there's not as much you can do about getting that money back.
That's exactly right. And so you want to be pretty careful of those things. As a reminder, no legitimate company will ever call you. No legitimate company will ever give you an ad that says call this number or do this thing. Believe me, Microsoft has way too many customers to care about you. I hate to put it quite that way, but that's the way that goes. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rob from Rochester, New York. Hi, Rob. What's up?
Hey, hi. Nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you.
Quick question. I have an HP 4400 series printer, which stopped working. It does not print, even though there's good cartridges in it, and it will not, the paper won't cycle through it correctly. When I press the button to print, it'll draw a piece of paper in, and halfway out, it'll stop.
Yeah.
So, and this printer, I really like this printer because I've been using it, on two old laptops, an XP machine and a Windows 7 machine, neither of which is connected to the internet. I just use these for photo work. So I would really like to have a printer that I could use on either one of these machines. So what should I do? Should I take this printer to a repair shop and try to get it repaired, or should I look for a new printer? And if I should look for a new printer, what printer will work with those old machines?
Yeah, it's very hard finding new printers that have drivers for the really old operating systems.
Mm.
And any cost of repair, what is probably happening is the rubber rollers have gotten worn out and stiff. Sometimes you can try to oil them up again, but don't get too much oil on them because that's bad.
Yeah,
or the
right.
plastic gears will have broken.
Okay.
There is a repair company in East Rochester called ABC Electronics, and they still do electronic repair. It's hard to find
wow.
places now. But the cost of repair is probably going to be more than a new printer. That's part of the problem with these disposable printers.
Yeah.
Now what you should be able to do is find a printer that will either connect to your network either wirelessly or wired. And then you should be able to find a driver, that will at least do some of the things. So, for example, if your 4400 was a DeskJet, it's one of those all-in-one printers.
Yes.
And I don't know that there's new drivers for
That's
Windows 7.
Problem,
That's
yeah.
just simply a fact of life.
Right.
You kind of got to give that up. You still might be able to print to it, at least basically, but it won't do all the all-in-one stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I really care most about just printing. I don't care really much about scanning or faxing. I'm not interested in that. I don't need that capability.
Right.
So, no recommendations on what manufacturer I should start to look at.
HP has always made workhorses. I have a brother that I absolutely love, although now I'm starting to have that roller issue. I think every once in a while, one of the sheets comes out crumpled.
When you paid $10,000 for the printer, it lasted for 20 years. And now the printer's $49 and comes with $40 worth of ink.
Right.
I know.
Yeah.
And you spend $10,000 on the ink over.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so the best you can do is do your research ahead of time.
Yeah, you can look up drivers on the company's website and see how far back it goes before you actually buy it.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your information. I appreciate that a lot.
Thank you.
And love listening to you guys. Thanks for all the information you disseminate to us poor people who need a lot of help.
Well, it's our pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great program. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we are finding that, we know people love Windows 7. We absolutely get it. But you have to get the fact that nobody in the industry cares anymore. and they're just not making drivers, and they're not making products that deal with Windows 7. They've moved on, and much as you don't want to, you may find that you're going to need to at some point.
And Windows XP is probably even worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that 16-bit, or did it finally, was that at least 32-bit?
No, I don't think it was 32-bit. I think it was 8-bit, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, look, the industry moves on. At least what Apple did was say, you know what, we're moving on, and everything doesn't work now.
We had a customer last week who bought a new printer. It wouldn't work with her old computer, so she bought a new computer.
That makes sense to me. All right, that's it. We're done for this week, and in fact, we're done for the year. This is the last show of the year. We will not be here next Saturday. We will be in the chat tomorrow night, but we will not be in the chat next Sunday. We will be back in the new year after our heads go down from enjoying ourselves. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who comes in and does yeoman work every single time. I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, it's the holiday season, and whatever holiday you celebrate, in whatever way you celebrate, or even if you're just sitting around relaxed, be good, be healthy, be safe, and we will see you in just 332 hours.